Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, pre-Thanksgiving edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And it just so happens, as we open this podcast, that it turns out we're enjoying the same snack. Pre-podcast.
Well, or are we?
Right, that's fair. That's fair. We're both having M&M's. And this discovery sort of led us into a side conversation about the different levels of M&Ms, because to me there is a very clear M&M hierarchy, and we haven't shared this with each other, so I figure we can just open the podcast. We got movies, we got some TV shows, to talk about, but let's talk M&Ms real quick, because to me this is pretty clear. I'll start with you. Do you have a definitive greatest kind of M&M?
I don't think that I do. I think I have several M&Ms that I quite like that, depending on my mood, I might favor at any given moment.
And several. Okay. Uh-huh. So walk me through the various M&Ms that sometimes are your favorite.
Well, now I don't know how M&M intense you are. I don't think I'm that intense, but I am a candy aisle browser on a semi-frequent occasion.
I will say M&M's hard at work adding flavors, it seems like.
Right.
And so I haven't sampled them all.
Yeah. So one of the new flavors is caramel.
Yeah, that one I have had.
And that one I really like when I'm in the mood for caramel, because it's not really an M&M. It's like a softer milk dud with a candy coating. It's kind of great. And then I also quite like peanut butter M&Ms, which are the ones I have in front of me right now, although that is the fact that I have them in front of me is my girlfriend's choice. She bought them.
Gotcha.
And I also like, of the new ones, some of the ones that are like Nestle Crunches, you know, the crunchy ones, crunchy rice sort of a deal.
Okay, yeah.
And I also, on occasion, like the pretzel M&Ms.
Yeah, the pretzel M&M is underrated. It's still in the mass below to me. So I really like caramel as a concept and a thing. I don't particularly enjoy the caramel M&M. As I think the caramel in it's a little weird. It's like, you're right, milk dud is sort of a comparison, but it's a little almost like harder. And it like if the caramel M&M was...
Oh, it's
was,
not harder. Milk dud caramel is like rock hard when you put it in your mouth.
Yeah, okay. So it's somewhere between that and like... But like if the caramel M&M was like the Caramello candy bar almost, or even like a Snickers consistency where you opened it up and it was sort of like drippy, gooey caramel. Like, I'd be all into that, but it's not really
somewhere
that.
Between Snickers and Milk Dud is I think where, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the caramel M&M is a little bit of a disappointment to me because I was all in conceptually. So as it turns out, we are having the same snack because I am also eating peanut butter M&Ms.
Okay.
Which
so
to
that's
me,
your clear superior.
Clear number one. M&M, and the peanut butter's great. You get the salty sweet combo. The texture is just right. I'm all in on the peanut butter M&M, and I don't know why it took them so long to come up with it.
I'll tell you what, I don't necessarily feel as strongly, but I can't disagree with anything you just said. And in particular, I want to note, as one of the world's foremost Reese's Peanut Butter Cup critics, that what makes the peanut butter M&M such a great candy is that the peanut butter is of immensely higher quality and smoother consistency than what you get in a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Yeah. It, you know, it's interesting because they and I would consider myself, I guess, a fan of Reese's, although I think the quality of the peanut butter in the cup has gone down quite a bit over the years.
The Reese's pieces have better quality peanut butter than the cup.
Yes, but the Reese's pieces, the shell candy quality is low, right? So,
and it doesn't have the chocolate coating that the peanut butter M&M has.
Yeah, so the peanut butter M&M nails the shell, and it nails the peanut butter, which is why it's my number one. Now, my number two is the traditional peanut M&M.
Uh huh. That's solid.
Yeah, always a good choice. And hearty, you know what I mean? Like, you eat those peanut M&Ms and you get the regular bag of those, you're done. You feel like I really did my work with the candy. And then pretty much all the other M&Ms are kind of in a group back there. The Rice Krispie one, I don't mind. The pretzel one's not bad. It's a little hard to find for me. The, caramel I'll eat, plain I'll eat in a pinch. And then I think there may be a couple more that I haven't tried. That I would just
put some other goofy ones that aren't bad.
I'm not here to bury that group of M&Ms. It's fine. It's just it's just not peanut butter. You know?
No,
I mean?
It certainly isn't.
Yeah. So all right. So good. So I feel like we're sort of in agreement.
I'm glad we took care of that.
All right. Should we jump into one of these two movies we saw this week?
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
Do we do good news or bad news first?
I have no bad news. So I think we should definitely start with the bad news.
Okay. I was really disappointed by Widows.
Okay. Let's hear it.
I guess part of me was expecting a different movie, which maybe I shouldn't have been given that Steve McQueen directed it. I just thought this movie it was doing way too much. Does that make sense? I felt like It was trying so hard to bring in all these levels of emotion and depth and also be a caper and a mystery. And it didn't really get it done for me in any of those departments because it was spread so thin, I felt.
Interesting. Now,
I'm just curious. Are we going to spoiler?
I think we should spoiler. In fact, I think we have to spoiler it. To talk about it.
Major spoiler alert. Here's a thing that I think it's unfair for movies not to consider if they don't want us to think about it. I know Liam Neeson's not dead because he's Liam Neeson.
Interesting. Period. In fact, it's right here in my notes. Like, there was an audible gasp in the theater.
Mine too, and I was like, what's with these idiots?
I didn't see it coming at all.
Really?
No. And I would say to you that, yes, he's Liam Neeson, but I just thought he was going to be Liam Neeson in flashbacks for the whole movie.
It never occurred to me
that he would still be alive. Never.
I don't think he spoke a single line in those flashbacks. Like,
yeah, he did. He spoke a lot of lines in those flashbacks.
Only after we found out he was still alive when we learned about the kid.
No, like there was. I mean, the kid thing was crazy, but right there were meetings on the boat that he had and stuff, and all of these other the scenes with them in bed, and there were scenes from their marriage. Like, he spoke in all of those.
Okay. I feel like mostly he just like caressed her and they had weird kisses.
They had arguments and stuff, right? Because they had to show the marriage was troubled.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. It felt sort of telegraphed to me. And
yeah,
there
I
was
didn't
also,
see it coming at all.
How about this though? There was also, and tell me if this is true of your theater as well. There was an audible gasp in my theater when he showed up at the end in the garage. And
no.
It's like, it's like, what, you thought he was just going to be in the bathroom for that one time and he wasn't going to show up again? Like, what? Who are you people?
Yeah, like, once he's alive, then it's Chekhov's gun. You know what I mean? Like, you know he's going off in the third act. So
right. Okay. So, All right. At least your theater wasn't that stupid. but even if you didn't see that coming...
By the way, thought, like, 10:10 showing on a Saturday morning, there was a surprising number of theater people in the theater. So good,
yeah,
good on
Widows. Yeah, I saw it last night, Tuesday at 6:50, and it was packed. And people had weird reactions the whole movie. I didn't like that either. That may have affected my enjoyment of it. But also, like, let's just address the kid. What? I took it a little personally that this movie seemed to have seemed to sort of purposelessly make Chicago an asshole.
The city of Chicago?
Yeah. Like, what purpose did it serve to have their child murdered by cops or mention multiple times how many murders had happened in the last year in Chicago? What was that? What purpose did that serve? Was there a real statement being made about police violence? Because to me, other than just sort of randomly having their kid murdered senselessly by a frightened policeman, I don't know what that was. What was that?
I think that the murder of the kid was not trying to make a statement about Chicago or about police violence. It was about having a reason for the dissolution and the distance between Liam Neeson and Viola Davis.
Don't you think that's a pretty extreme?
By making it a racial thing, right? Then it also served to deepen the racial fissure in their marriage, right? And there were a couple of calls to that. I'm not saying that was an extremely necessary. Yeah, I think extreme choice. You're right. I think that might be a fair way to put that. But I don't think it was reasonless, and I don't think it was about. I have a lot less invested in it, but I thought Chicago came out looking pretty good. Like, you know what I mean?
Physically, yes, because it's a beautiful goddamn city, man.
Right.
But
and there's all these, you know, shots of her fabulous apartment, you know, like in the sky.
Great.
And
of course, but then
you know,
they're
the juxtaposition
like, everyone gets killed, and the cops are crooked, and
like
they laugh at burned bodies.
The
and
crooked
then they shoot
ward,
kids.
Right? And then you're on that drive. With Colin Farrell in the back of the limo where it literally tracks you from the edge of his ward, into his nice house, you know. Now, look, it didn't have the nicest things to say about Chicago politics, but whoever does, right?
So, no, I know. But again, all that stuff seemed like even where the choices were not as extreme as the senseless murder of a young man by a police officer, like there were these choices that seemed pretty dramatic and specific, but didn't really seem to have any follow through in any way.
I really thought that the kid was going to die because he was on the cell phone, and that would have just been fine, I think, right?
Right. Why would it not be that? If you're not trying to say something, why would you not just have him crash?
Yeah, that part of it was a little. I agree that was a little weird, but it certainly didn't like ruin the movie for me.
Well, it's not that it ruined. It's just I feel like there were a lot of choices that were made that did extra stuff that never came home in any meaningful way.
Did you think that Ocean's 8 was doing too much?
Yes.
Did you think that the last Mission Impossible movie was doing too much?
Yeah.
I agree with you on both of those, but I feel like this is very different from that. You know what I mean? Like this is certainly a subtler movie than that.
I guess it's not as subtler as I was hoping or expecting. or it's, you know what it is? It's much subtler. It's not about the subtlety. It's taking even if they're subtle swings, it's taking too many swings, maybe even more so than Ocean's 8. At least Mission Impossible is pretty ridiculous, but I think this movie takes even more cuts. They might be slap single cuts, but like you're grounding out too much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I guess, and maybe that's the difference with us. Is like,
and I had very high expectations, and I'm not saying this is a bad movie or unenjoyable entirely. And actually, you know, my parents saw it the day before and said something to the effect – my dad said something like he thought it was too contrived. And that part didn't bother me because I kind of sign up for that when I go to see a movie like this.
Yeah, but, well, a heist movie sort of – I mean, it's kind of contrived by nature, isn't it, right?
Exactly.
You have an elaborate plan and a million things have to happen.
Right. And my take on that is always the time – not a bunch of crazy things happened is the one they didn't make a movie about. So that doesn't, I'm kind of in for the contrived, the just by nature contrived part of it. It's just, again, you're giving me dramatic dissolution of a marriage. You're giving me, corrupt politicians. You're giving me gangsters in politics. You're giving me, cops killing kids because of racial bias without ever following through. You're giving me a pretty bad Chicago accent from Colin Farrell. It's just a lot.
All right. So I didn't do the accent critique.
I usually don't, but
I'm not qualified for that.
He was trying really hard at it. Strangely. Usually he has a sort of effortless American accent.
Yeah.
I feel. And he went for like something specific and I think he missed.
But I loved his performance. I'm here for Colin Farrell, character actor.
Well, here's what I would say. I liked, if not loved, most of the performances.
Yeah, me too.
And I even – like, it's not at all surprising that this was directed by the same person who directed 12 Years a Slave, right? Like, you're like, there are these – the shot you mentioned in particular stands out. Where you drive from like the sort of destitute part of his ward to the fancy house he's set up in for his campaign.
Yeah, and the way that you come along and you're kind of like mid this conversation, that's
and you're
like
not
fairly
looking
intense
at him at all.
Yeah, but you're like, but it starts out you just think like, oh, I'm in the car because this is going to be an intense conversation, and then you realize, no, this scene is really trying to say something else entirely. You know, I thought that was a really cool trick.
Yeah, but it is an intense conversation as well.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really cleverly done. And his whole – you're right. He's a character with a lot of depth for what he is. Like usually the sort of de facto villain of a criminal v. criminal caper like this is less complicated – and more unlikable.
Yeah.
And again, like, so like,
and that's kind of the Billions effect almost, isn't it? Right.
Yes.
You know,
totally. And I'm not coming down. I don't want to come down too hard on this movie. I guess I just had higher expectations. I thought it would deliver more like clearly and distinctly on like a couple of the things it tried to do rather than take all these cuts and not totally. I don't know exactly what it is, but I something about it didn't quite land as a complete film despite having a lot of parts that were enjoyable.
I enjoyed it more. I really liked, I mean, it's a deep bench. You know, like,
it really is. Acting wise, it really is.
You know, Robert Duvall and Brian Tyree Henry. Daniel Kaluuya hardly has anything to do almost in this movie.
But boy, it's crazy to think the guy who is menaced so memorably in Get Out is so menacing in this.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yep. And then I thought a lot of the people, it was one of the better Michelle Rodriguez performances I'd seen in a while. Viola Davis is compulsively watchable. She's just, I mean, you know, whatever. She's Viola Davis. She's going to be riveting.
She's excellent.
Lucas is in this movie.
Yep.
as a like, kind of skeezy dude. I really enjoyed that. Carrie Coon doesn't have a lot to do, but she's there, and then you're never sad about that.
The lady who it turns out is a Broadway star, I guess, Cynthia
Erivo? Yeah.
I think, who was in Bad Time at the El Royale.
I was wondering if that was the same woman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she sang beautifully, of course, in Bad Time.
She's quite good in this in a very different role.
Yes, completely different. And looking like, you know, Cara Maria from The Challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Just ripped. Shredded up.
I think they've both been doing the CrossFit. You could tell.
Yeah,
And I really also liked the one woman who I didn't know going into this. I haven't looked her up to know what she's done, but Elizabeth Debicki.
Yeah, the blonde lady.
Yeah. Like, I thought she would, like, that might be the most important role in the film, almost, in a way, you know?
Great.
And I thought she was excellent. So, yeah, I just thought it was fun, you know, look, it's weird because I, you know, Steve McQueen and Viola Davis, and I'm thinking, like, you know, and the time of year that it's coming out, you know, I'm thinking that this is, you know, Oscar bait, and it doesn't really seem like a very Oscar-y type movie. No. But it doesn't mean it was a bad time. You know,
it was not a bad time, and it was not a bad movie. I somehow expected more, and the more I talk about it, I'm less sure what I was expecting, but it didn't quite hit.
Yeah. Also, everyone was a little too buff. Viola Davis, like, who shouts to Viola Davis's trainer.
Yeah.
But, like, man, it's like, I know how old you are. Why are you this ripped?
Yeah.
You're a Chicago Teachers Union delegate. Why are you this ripped?
It's funny. You're kind of expecting like a goofy training montage or something at some point. They never really do that except for one target practice scene where Michelle Rodriguez can't shoot.
Yeah. I mean, Michelle Rodriguez, I expect you're going to be ripped. That's fair.
Sure.
But the rest of them, I don't know. Yeah, Cynthia Erivo was like you said, man. You know,
she looked like a boxer, man.
Yeah. Fight MMA. All right, so I take it then from this that you really did enjoy Green Book quite a bit.
I think it's the opposite in many in every way that it's good to be the opposite of what I just said about Widows. It's the total opposite in that this is complete Oscar bait. It is a relatively simple premise with a straightforward message and morality at the center of it, and it's just perfect.
Yeah, it this is again straight from my notes, and it's a movie that, it like you said, is sort of the opposite of trying to do too much. It never really attempts to dazzle you at any point, and yet it never missteps, you know, like it, it's straightforward and yet completely nailed. It's like that, you know, like when you get like a really nice piece of fish at a restaurant and it's like kind of just lightly seasoned and cooked perfectly and it tastes amazing, even though you can't really say that they, you know, they did a lot to it. They just cooked up a piece of fish, but they did it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when you ordered it, you were like, whatever, I'll just have the fish.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh.
It's just perfect. And
it reminded
and you know
me a lot of
–
sorry, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, unlike fish – I don't feel like this ever happens anymore. And even some of the times I feel like we thought it happened in the past didn't age great.
Hmm. Well,
like, does anybody stand really strong by Forrest Gump? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I was just about to say, and maybe this is an example, or maybe it's not. I'm curious as to what you think. It reminded me of Hidden Figures in that way, in that it was – it's an Oscar bait movie, but it's not really trying to be an Oscar bait movie. It's just sort of this straightforward historical story.
Yeah.
Kind of unpretentiously done.
No, you're right.
In
I do
feel
think
good
this
way.
Is better.
Yeah.
I do think
I like
better.
Hidden Figures a lot, I gotta say. But
I did too. So
I would probably agree with that, but I liked Hidden Figures a lot.
It might not be significantly better. But I do think this really struck me in terms of just how perfectly executed every piece of it was. The dialogue, the acting, the direction, the arc of the story, just like I don't know one way it could have been better.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't have a lot of notes for it, you know what I mean? I would agree with that 100%.
Like, it's just it's a feel-good holiday movie, and it's perfect. And that's awesome. It's awesome. And even if Hidden Figures is one other recent example, I still don't feel like it's something we get to have that often. And I would encourage everyone to see it.
I would encourage people to see it. It is weird, right, that it didn't come out at Christmas time. Like, why is this movie out at Thanksgiving?
It's a little weird. It's a little like, weird. But maybe they wanted some isolation. I got to tell you, like, the movie release schedule over the next month and a half is bananas.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really a spoiler to say that Christmas figures very prominently in the plot of this movie. So, you know, it would seem to be and it's also just a sort of very feel-good kind of story. You know, like, I don't know. It seems like it would be an automatic for, like, a December release. Maybe they, I guess... I'm sure it was some sort of financial reason.
Who knows?
I do think it's interesting, that this movie was directed by Peter Farrelly.
Yeah. And you know what? It is quite funny.
Yeah, it is quite funny, but not in a Farrelly Brothers
not
way.
Not in a Farrelly Brothers way at all, no.
What is the other Farrelly Brothers? Like, does he was like, what, you didn't want me on this one at all? What am I doing here?
I wonder how that shook out.
And it's written and produced by a gentleman named Nick Vallelonga, who I can only assume is the son.
A descendant.
Yeah, yeah. Of the Tony Vallelonga in the story. You can tell there's a lot of like just a lot of that sort of personal love and care taken in the story of everyone involved. And I do think it really does honor their friendship.
And honor each of the characters that it spends time with.
Yeah.
Down to the wife and, you know, the Indian butler, even.
Yeah. Band.
Or the band. Yeah. The kraut, if you will. it's just, yeah. What a great movie. What a great time.
It's not a flashy screenplay by any means, but every once in a while, it would drop one of those lines where you're just like, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. And it's very well considered. And like you said, there's really no misstep. There's no scene. Again, in a movie like this, there's almost inevitably a scene where you're like, okay, all right, we get it. And there's just nothing like this here. Just like every line seems worth it. And yeah, I've nothing but glowing positive things to say about it.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is it's just it's hard for me at least not to watch this movie and think about how we're not that far from that world.
Yeah, I did have that when I walked out. I had that.
Yeah,
but
and it
but
seems
I
like
really
seems like
think
we're,
about it
we're,
during the movie.
We're sliding closer. You yeah. know, I sort of feel like you know, Don Shirley as an individual, it's kind of like an amalgam of all of everything, all the people, you know, that the MAGA movement are really sort of afraid of. You know.
Yes.
And I don't know. It just that part of it gave me pause. So it's just I don't necessarily know if that's intended subtext in the movie or not. But it certainly is there, at least for me, as a viewer. You know what I mean?
I mean, I bet it's not from the written perspective, because I'm sure it was written before all this garbage. But it's inevitable. It's an inevitable comparison.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think if you're telling the story of this friendship that was really framed by segregation, like these issues have to be the issues are certainly in your mind as you're writing the book. The timing, you know, who knows?
Well, but also I think, it you know, in as much as it's a reminder that we're at a dangerous place in our country's history, it's also a reminder that, you know, experience and education are the best ways to battle prejudice, in as much as there is battleable prejudice and not just sycophantic madness. I think it's nice to be reminded of that sometimes, even if much of the fight is less pleasant.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, there was some, and I didn't realize this when we talked about watching it, there was some controversy around
Viggo.
And using the N-word while promoting the movie.
Yeah.
I would definitely say do not let that prevent you from seeing this movie. And,
no, he's an old man who did a stupid thing. He's
even
not...
still, I don't know exactly just for what he said, but I can understand why that word might come up innocently in the context of talking about this movie.
Yeah, it came up as innocently as that word ever can. He was trying to make a point, and he made the mistake of using the word instead of referring to the word, and he apologized for that mistake and admitted that mistake, and I think hopefully we can all move forward.
Yeah, I think if you watch the movie and come away going, man, that Viggo Morton is a racist,
yeah,
I'd be very surprised. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. And while we're here, because we didn't specifically say it, Mahershala Ali is a marvel.
Yeah.
To think that this is the guy who was in Moonlight, who was Cottonmouth in Luke Cage.
That's the thing to me. I'm like, Luke Cage got lucky grabbing that guy when he did.
Holy moly. He's a powerhouse. He can do whatever he wants. Yep. He can do anything. And he was remarkable in this role. I mean, I don't know Don Shirley, but I don't see how he could have played the part I watched any better. It was just spectacular.
Yeah, what a presence. I think he is kind of just sort of quietly, quickly, easily ascended into our A-list of actors at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. Who's better?
Right. That's what I mean. It's like, I can't really... He's in that group now, I feel like.
Oh, he's it.
And
he's
I don't know if he's, you know, he's that type of movie star yet, but I think that comes.
I think that's just a matter of casting.
Yeah. And I you get the sense that the industry recognizes this and is going to be willing to put him in whatever he wants to work in. So it's just going to be a question of his choices going forward.
If he wins a second Oscar, it sure won't hurt.
that's also true. Oakland's home. All right.
Yeah, baby. Oakland blowing up.
I'm very curious to see what he's doing next.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is in, I think he's in Alita Battle Angel.
He is, yeah. And he has a voice in the Spider-Man animated.
Yeah, that's
thing
weird. That's animated Spider-Man in the theaters? I don't totally get what's going on there.
Well, you know, it's VO work. I think everybody sort of treats
it. No. I'm not saying I don't get him doing it. I don't get why it's coming out in theaters.
You know what? I forgot he was in Hidden Figures. There you go.
Yeah, he's one of these guys that is both totally magnetic and spectacular on screen, but also melts so completely into roles you can forget he was in a thing.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. He's great. I'm 100% here for that.
Okay. Can we talk about TV? This is one of the more interesting weeks, I feel like, where I have stuff to say and am excited to discuss everything on the list.
All right. So bring it up. What do you got?
How many Kominsky methods have you watched?
I should have been prepared to answer that question.
Well, okay, I've only watched two, so I'm guessing you've watched at least that many.
Yes, I've watched more than two.
Okay. I think this show is delightful and touching and thoughtful and really well acted by its two leads, and I'm just loving it, even though I've only watched two so far. I had a busy week. But I think Alan Arkin is predictably excellent, and Michael Douglas is really quite charming in this role, and I think it's really well written as well. I was honestly moved by the funeral scene, both to laughter and tears, and I'm very impressed.
Yeah, the funeral scene is like sort of the moment where it all locks in, you know, like you have these fears, you know, when the show starts, cause it's Chuck Lorre, you know, and there's a lot of like prostate jokes and you wonder if it's going to be like, maybe a little bit better version of, what was that? The Cool Kids. That was, you know, right. It was like, oh right. God, hacky sitcom, old people jokes, you know, with higher rent actors. And you sort of quickly realize it's not that. You get to this acting class and you go, this is fine, but we saw it so much better in Barry. You know what I mean? Like, and you're like, I don't know. And then, I don't know, somewhere within that first or second episode, you realize that there's depth to these characters, that you actually care about them. And then by the time the funeral hits, you're like, oh man, I'm really choked up and invested. And, you know, it's funny and touching, and I like all these people. Nancy Travis, by the way, I've always thought has been really great. And I've been sad that she's been stuck in Tim Allen land for the last few years. So it's nice to see her getting a great role. There's a lot that's legitimately funny. I'm going to watch the whole rest of this. Good on Chuck Lorre.
I hate to admit it, but he's done a really excellent job here, I think. Because you know what? To the point of that, why am I struggling with the funeral scene? It, like, you know, Patti LaBelle's in there, and the cast in general is very high octane for a 30-minute.
Yeah, Jay Leno.
Sort of dramedy. Jay Leno makes an appearance.
Did you think Streisand was going to show up?
Of a joke.
Did you think Streisand was going to show up?
I did.
For like
I
half
did.
A second, I did.
and you only think that you certainly, when you're thinking that might be Sorry, possible, you're considering the fact that Chuck Lorre is a big deal.
Yeah. And he got Jay Leno and Patti LaBelle. Why not? Right? You know?
Exactly. Exactly. And I thought that was a fabulous turn.
Yeah.
So, you know, credit where credit's due. I also will enjoy the rest of this.
There's a bit in the first part of it, you know, where Michael Douglas is talking about like hacky sitcom actors and stuff, where you can tell Chuck is aware of what you think of him. You know?
Yeah.
I liked this sort of salvo response, you know? I thought his shows were hacky, but I never thought he was a hack. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Okay, I guess. I'm not sure I agree, but I hear you.
Here's what I'm saying. It's like, he works in this form that is hacky. This is not a defense of Big Bang Theory or Mom or Two and a Half Men, because those shows are hacky. You know what I mean? But he's clearly the king of the hack merchants. You know what I mean, right? And there's a certain level of talent that it takes to get there. And I feel like
it's like being Scott Storch in 1999.
Kinda, yeah. And you know, like, there's just little things that hint that he has a level of depth. He has a gear that he's just not really chosen to use until now. You know, and I feel that
certainly seems to be the case.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'm enjoying watching him use it. I'm not here to defend any of his previous work, and I would not recommend that you watch any of those other shows. But I'm here for Kominsky Method.
I really like it. Now, let's do the Ben Stiller bit. We only get to watch one episode of Escape at Dannemora, and I think, just relevantly because of the conversation we're having, I think that works to its detriment here.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what this show is really.
Yeah. You know what it feels like? It feels like this is a limited series that should have been a movie.
Yeah. Yes. This felt like an extended opening act of a film for sure.
Yeah. It just feels like it's going on too long. And the rest of the story is interesting. You know what I mean? So
I know, but the thing is, we also, like, there are so many things that could happen over the course of whatever it is, six or eight episodes, that, like, it's just, we really don't know is part of the problem, right?
Yeah. I hope that it's going to make more sense, that this first episode makes more sense in context, where it's almost like a, you know, you're like, oh, well, this was an exercise in character building, and I understand why this is all going to pay off. You know?
Right.
Knowing what the details of the story, it's sort of hard to imagine that.
Yeah, I guess, but also it's just impossible to say.
You're right. It is also impossible to say. I could be very wrong in a few episodes from now.
Yeah, it's just so it's just too tricky in one episode of anything, especially in a world where I think we've become somewhat accustomed to being able to bite off a few chunks. I guess it's going to be 7 episodes. And like I have no complaints about the acting or anything. I just don't totally know what it is.
It's weird. Like has this ever happened to you where, you know, we're watching something for this show and you feel like I may need to watch this again because I just don't know what to say about it?
Yeah, a little bit.
That was sort of the feeling that I had, was like, all right, like. and that's sort of a weird reaction to be left with. Like, I don't think it's bad necessarily. Like, it's not. It doesn't seem like a bad show. The bones of it are good. It's a very interesting story. The cast is fantastic. I don't think it's necessarily poorly directed. It just seems oddly paced.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's like, I don't know that I can recommend it. At the same time, all these pieces are in place where 3 episodes from now, I might think, I absolutely have to recommend this. So I think that's really the conclusion here is we're both probably going to watch at least another episode or two, and we'll either revisit it or not, and that's how you'll know.
Right, yeah. If we talk about it again, it was either great or terrible, and right. If we don't, it was meh.
yeah, exactly.
There you
exactly.
go. All right. I feel like we were really on the same page a lot this week.
I'm fascinated to see if that continues right now.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw my tweet.
I did not see your tweet.
The season finale of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia blew my brain up. I don't know. First of all, I thought it was remarkable. I mean, it's in a positive way. It was a shock. And I'm so glad I hadn't Googled it ahead of time. But I couldn't believe they took it the way they did. I was honestly moved. In a stupor, I watched the last 5 or 6 minutes 3 times in a row. And each time I was moved. And then I Googled it and read all about how they made it and decided to do it. And obviously we're about to have a relatively big spoiler here, although we're pretty late to this party, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it's out there.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. I read a whole Vulture piece about it. But they basically, for the first time in the history of the show, they just decided not to make a joke about something and made a really passionate interpretive dance piece about Mac's homosexuality, punctuated by Danny DeVito understanding his Mac's inner struggle, and then the end of the season. And it was such a dramatic turn. I honestly don't know what happens in the next season.
Yeah. it's one of those things that sort of happy accident's the wrong word, because clearly a lot of thought
and it's clearly not an accident this. And in
but
fact
like, there
you realize
comes a point with a show like this where you've done so much that I think that sincere and heartfelt and touching is like that becomes a third rail at some point, you know what I mean? Right. So
well, and I'm making a lot of points that this Vulture piece also made because I can't help it, but there are just many of the same thoughts I had watching it. But, like, you and I are not dudes that are super tolerant of ill-formed humor of bad taste.
Yeah.
And Always Sunny is one of the only shows that has managed to maintain a level of quality in its bad taste that makes it still good. It's a hard thing to do in 2018, and they're one of the only shows that I think has really done it. And So for after hundreds of episodes, literally, to suddenly, for the first time ever, not tell a joke is just like, it's insane, and it changes everything.
Yeah.
Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But
I mean, it's not going to change everything. I think it's going to change like little things. You know what I mean? I mean, just the fact that for Mac to come out, I think, on the show at all was, you know, an interesting choice. Yeah, yes. You know, for the show. And I think that it's going to be like that, where he's going to be, you know, it's kind of like that, where it's just going to be a thing that's sort of weaved into the fabric of the show in a way that's, I think, still going to feel natural, but the show is largely going to be the same going forward.
I think you're probably right, but it felt so dramatic, and then to not see it for now however many months, despite knowing that the 14th season has already been picked up, it's a crazy decision, and in many ways a pretty big risk, because if they didn't pull it off, like, they could have gone kind of bad. And I just thought it was perfect. Again, another thing this week that I thought was perfect.
Yeah. I'm skimming this article as we this Vulture article as we talk.
Yeah.
I'm going to just recommend this article.
It's a great article. It really nails it. It goes deep, and it really hits the nail on the head.
Yeah, like now as I'm reading the stuff that went into this, you know, it's like, wow, that's, I wish I had known some of that. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really just like, I mean, I'm not an interpretive dance guy, but it was a really affecting piece. It was just really great.
Sorry, I'm looking at Rob's Instagram post.
Yeah.
He says, look, it's not that hard. All you need to do is lift weights 6 days a week, stop drinking alcohol, don't eat anything after 7 p.m., don't eat any carbs or sugar at all. In fact, just don't eat anything you like. Get the personal trainer from Magic Mike, sleep 9 hours a night, run 3 miles a day, and have a studio pay for the whole thing over a 6 to 7 month span. I don't know why everyone's not doing this. It's a super realistic lifestyle and an appropriate body image to compare oneself to.
and you know, this is the same guy who packed on 50 pounds for a joke.
Yeah.
So it seemed totally realistic that he did that just for a joke, and to have it all pay off with this, it's remarkable.
It is quite something. Good on Mac.
Yeah. And also, you know, he is the I think primary creator of the show.
Yes, and it's easy sort of like when you to look at this show now because it's been with us so long, you know, to just sort of think like this is sort of, but like the idea, like you wouldn't have thought, like this was like the first show on FX, and it was like they took a bunch of kids who I think made some YouTube videos, and the idea that this would be 14 seasons and that Charlie Day would become a movie star, and like, you know, everyone is sort of like kind of gone on to do their thing. They've all been leads in other shows.
We've gotten used to it,
yeah.
But it is remarkable.
It's pretty remarkable, and I think shows a lot about the commitment of the people involved in the show to really what it is they do and how much they think about it and their craft. So, yeah, kudos. Kudos to It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right. They shot the pilot for $200.
I forgot about that, yeah. I think I may need to do just some holiday Netflix binging on the back episodes of that, because I left the show for a while and clearly I've missed some stuff.
That's the other thing. It really just, there are very few episodes that are not hilariously funny. I mean, they're all crude and ridiculous, but it's almost always high level.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's a consistency about it that's a blessing and a curse in a way. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, but it does make the high points higher. You know what I mean? Like the Nightman Cometh and stuff like
indeed,
that. You know,
indeed. And this episode, I think this may go down as one of the best. For
oh
sure.
Yeah, for sure. This is, I think, going to be a legendary episode of the show.
Yeah. all right. So I think, speaking of consistency, I have one thing for homework I definitely want to do that I imagine as you peruse Netflix this week, you also came across.
Is that the Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
It sure is.
Yes. Look, you know me, I'm not super excited about Westerns. But
I imagine Coen Brothers sweetens it a little,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, Coen Brothers Netflix movie, I'm here. It's already downloaded.
Okay.
We watch on the plane.
I also would be interested in, if you were, the Trevor Noah stand-up.
Yeah, sure. I'll watch that. I haven't seen Trevor Noah's stand-up. So.
Ever?
No.
No. Oh. I think he's quite good. He's a good impressionist, among other things.
I've watched a fairer amount of Daily Show, but I haven't seen his stand-up, so I'd be willing to.
I've really never seen the Daily Show with him. I've seen highlights here and there, but not much.
I'm going to throw out something that you obviously already know about because I texted you last night and demanded that you watch the the finale of the challenge.
I will get through the challenge.
Yeah. Which we'll talk about for reasons I think you'll understand when you watch it. And then, I don't know. You got anything else? I feel like maybe we should see a movie or something.
Yeah. Have you heard of Little Drummer Girl?
I have heard of it, and I dare say that I've seen a preview for it. It's like a spy movie, is that right?
It's on AMC. I guess it's a limited, maybe just 2-episode deal. But yeah, it's a John le Carré adaptation. Or no, I take it back. It's 6 episodes.
Oh, that's
three parts, 6 episodes. It was dropped 2 at a time, I guess.
Gotcha. Oh, with Skarsgård.
On AMC.
Skarsgård and Michael Shannon.
Mm-hmm, Michael Shannon, yep.
All right, I'm in on that.
Okay. I don't know if there is something that comes out. Is it Creed 2 that comes out on? Yeah. Creed 2 comes out tonight, technically.
Oh, yeah.
And The Favorite, which I'd also like to see at some point, comes out on Friday.
Let's hold off on those because we're all traveling. I don't know how much time we're going to have to
agree. It's tough to get to the theater during Thanksgiving week. A lot of other things to do.
So we may save that for next week.
Yes, because the releases on the 30th are less exciting to me.
We can do a definitive ranking of your Thanksgiving meal.
Oh, sure, as always.
Instead, in that section. All right, I gotta get going because I gotta go pack.
All right, travel safely. Bye-bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.